Blog Talk Radio.
This is the voice of Mocha868, and you're listening to Regal Radio Open Poetry, brought to you by Il Nostro Regno Poetry Group. Welcome to our kingdom.
Hello, 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 and welcome to Regal Radio.
Hello, with Jay, Mocha.
Hey, Mocha.
Hi, Jay. Nice.
How are
to
you
be
doing
here
today?
I am wonderful. For once, Blog Talk has given me a ease up, and I am here. I'm happy to be here again.
That is great.
Thank you, and shout out to Scientific for our intro music today. It was quite a vibe. I really, really am enjoying getting to showcase a little bit of his music every time we do these shows. So I'm super grateful for that and for all of his assistance. He also did our group logo and background, in case anybody wants to know. Yes, he does graphics as well. If anybody would like to purchase or lease any of the beats that they hear on our show, you can email him at scientific@gmail.com. That's scientific@gmail.com. Again, scientific@gmail.com. Shout out to Scientific, and thank you so much for all of your support. And Jay, my left hand, would you like to introduce our first caller on the show?
Absolutely, absolutely. And let's welcome to the show, Rack and Tour. Hey, Rack, how you doing?
I'm good. You know, we used to call you Ice Cream Man, so does that make you two Jamocha?
I heard someone call us. Someone called us JMO on the board the other day. I don't know if you saw that, Mocha.
No, that's cool.
I did not, really.
Yes.
That's cute.
I like that better than Jamocha. That's cool. JMO.
I guess we have our super pair name now.
There you go. Yeah, and
like Brangelina.
Brangelina, yeah. I was just gonna say the same thing.
I'm trying to fix right now something that's messed up. The link that was out on the board is not working right. So what I'm doing is I am putting in a correct link out there. And
God damn it, Blog Talk.
Yeah, the link is working. Hold on. Trying to get it right, though.
Blog Talk can't outsmart the nerd.
And let's see if that worked. Yes, there we go. Okay, I got the link set up now. It's good in the topic, and we're all good to go. So there you go, Blog Talk. There you go, Gonzo, out on the board. Good to see you. The Gonzo Meister is out.
Yes, Gonzo.
And I think we might have a couple more people listening out there. I'm looking at who's online. I think Omega may be listening out there. I know Omega has a poem for us today. No. I'm wrong.
Naomi said she would tune in occasionally when she can.
Yep.
So shout out to Naomi.
I'll tell you what. I know where we want to start. Okay. And
lead the way.
I'm going to lead the way with someone who asked me to read them. And that would be our good friend all the way from North Carolina. She can't call in today, but she asked specifically. This is our dear friend, Becky Friend. And this is called High Roller.
Becky.
I know. I wish she could call in. Love her voice. And I'm not going to sing it with a southern drawl. I'm not going to say it with a southern drawl, even though I should.
It sounds like a grandma, you know, when Becky talks, you know, you just kind of want to curl up in her lap.
Oh, shut your mouth. All right. This is called High Roller by Becky Friend. It goes like this. Her night spot of choice grows dim, now twilight rimmed, as windows darken and tobacco fog snakes in a slow winding spread, like the border town smog threading the alley beside the gold dust casino just outside of Reno. She sips with pressed lips, warm whiskey juleps. 2 days without a win, but still she spins and spins and spins. Same seat, same wager, triple red hot sevens, a cornucopian heaven. Dollar slots with lots of fruit colors that bounce in between her eyes and machine. She chases a gambler's daydream, that jackpot hit with psychedelic pink blue greens, ringing bells and a twin spin bonus. Housewife plus magician can turn the next grocery trip into bar tips, college funds into two-bit runs. At the drop of a coin, she rolls life's loaded dice. A daylight bows tonight at the Gold Dust Casino just outside of Reno. End poem.
Nice, Becky. Nice.
I agree. I love this little tale here. So many people get addicted to this type of stuff, especially, you know, here in Wisconsin, we have casinos all over the place and they just pull in people. I know I had a person I worked with. He always used to go to the casinos and play the slots. But something about him, he always freaking won. He never went to the casino and didn't get money out of it. I don't know how he did it. He always found the hot machine and left with a couple $100 more than what he spent. So I wish I had his luck. But this is a great little tale here, and really like it. And it's something that any person can get sucked into. Really enjoyed how she put it. Rack, what'd you think?
Yeah, she did a great job hinting at the addiction that's involved in it. But, I mean, just the scene itself that she painted, you know, anyone that's gotten to know her on the site or anywhere else for that matter, you know, I'm sure would love to take a road trip with her and you know, it's not just the stuff that she describes, but, you know, again, if you know her, you want to take this trip, but you want to do it with her, you know. You're seeing it right now through her eyes, the way that she describes it and everything, but it makes it that much more relatable having interacted with her and stuff, you know. I could see her sipping her whiskey juleps and just, you know, hanging out at the same slot machine over and over again, waiting to hit that number. It's one of those dreams, like she mentioned, and you know, it is pretty much a dream. The odds, the casinos wouldn't exist if the odds weren't always in their favor. I mean, even though, you know, the law says it's not illegal to count cards, they still let, you know, kick people out for it and shit like that. So it's it's hard. It's hard to try and get over on that. And then there's all the fabled stories of the old mobsters and whatnot, and the back rooms and the knuckle breaking and the, you know, beatings and the you're not leaving without money, you know. It's really envisions. She doesn't mention any of that really, but I mean, it still conjures up those images for me. So I thought this was beautiful, Becky.
And Becky is listening out on the board right now, so great
she
that
hit
she
the
can.
Jackpot.
There
Hi,
you go.
Becky.
She hit the jackpot. And Nine of Hearts is also out there. Great to see Nine. What did you think of that,
Hi,
Mocha?
Nine. Yes, you really did stay up. First off, let me shout out Nine real quick for missing sleep for the show. You're a real G. Because he talked about it. I hope the coffee is working. Becky. This poem was awesome. Like, you can You can feel, I can picture it too, like Rack said, I can picture the, what's the word I'm looking for, the sort of grungy feeling of being in that old shitty casino that keeps robbing you of your money, but you know, you just keep going back because, I mean, like, what else is there to do other than gamble, I guess, for some people? I have never quite related to gambling. Like, I don't understand the pleasure in the vice, per se, because it all just seems like losing to me. Because, you know, like I said, like, the odds are stacked against you. And I think, don't some casinos, like, purposefully fix games? I mean, nobody talks about
that,
but I feel like... Yeah, the dealers, it's illegal to count cards. I did not know that. Don't casino dealers
count
cards?
No. It's not illegal, but if they find out that you're doing it, they ask you to leave.
Oh. Do the casino dealers not count cards, though?
No, they don't have to. The odds are in their favor. Blackjack's the only thing that you really have almost a chance at winning, and that's why people learn to count cards. If you know what, have an idea of what's going to come out next, then you've got a good chance of beating the odds at blackjack. And there was actually a book, and I wish I remembered the name, about a math teacher that had a crew that would go and spend weekends in Vegas, and really they made millions. There's a couple of books about it, but it's really an interesting story, and they get into all the details of you know, the legality of it, and the fact that, you know, well, people are just going to ignore that it's legal anyway and still say, well, I'm kicking you out. You know, once they came up with the facial recognition software, you walk into a casino right away, everyone that needs to know knows that you're in there. So, you know, that eye in the sky, as they say, sees everything. They could wind it back and catch if you're cheating. They've caught people with calculators and computers in their shoes, with wires running up their legs, tapping on their thighs when you know. And all this is their way of trying to count cards. But, you know, obviously they don't have any way of stopping someone that has a natural ability to do it. But to combat that, they turned out with the three-deck and five-deck shoe. So, you know, theoretically you can't count five decks. So, you know, it's like you can't. And, you know, the joke of it is, you know, even if this one guy comes in and takes them for a fortune, that there's, you know, look around. There's how many other hundreds of people that put the money right back in their pockets anyway.
Yeah, you guys are going to make that back by the end of the night.
That's true, that's true.
I don't know.
And the thing about it, you know what they call gambling, right?
Gambling.
No, how about this? You know what they call a lottery, right? Because we have a lottery here in Wisconsin. You know what they call a lottery, right?
Yeah, I think everywhere.
No, they call it a tax for people who can't do math.
My grandmother played the lottery a lot, and like those, you know, those scratch-off tickets and all that. I think that was her vice, but that's, I think, a problem before that she ever got into gambling. I don't quite understand the vice, and I don't think I ever will, because there's not a lot of pleasure in it as far as I'm concerned, but I can see how, you know, the thrill of winning, I guess. Maybe it's an adrenaline rush, the whole idea of risking something. Yeah. The whole, you know, some people are really addicted to doing risky things, like adrenaline junkies who like to jump out of planes and shit. Like, this is probably, I think, gambling aligns with that kind of vibe, that thrill vibe. And I can see how she really does capture that in the poem, like how she says she can turn a college fund into two-bit runs at the drop of a coin. It's humorous how she says it, but it's really serious. Like, people do that. People gamble away their kids.
Literally bet
their. Yeah, they'll bet things that they need for their survival, as though gambling were breathing for them. And in terms of really capturing addiction, I think she's done that well. This was an awesome poem, Becky.
I like what she said out on the board. She said out on the board, winning is a quick high like cocaine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Mocha, what do we have up next?
Up next, I do believe we have the wonderful Phil the Poet, who we do need to welcome to the group because he just joined. Welcome, Phil. Thanks for jumping right into the water and straight into the show. We appreciate
here. Great to have our friend from the UK around. So it is wonderful. And here we go.
Phil is so nice.
He really is.
This is a poem by Phil the Poet.
This is a poem by Phil the Poet called Rivals. Back in the good old days of Formula One, where racing was dangerous and a lot of fun, two rivals met, searching for success, trying to prove to each other who was best. One was seen always with two girls in each arm, sweet talking them with his English charm, drove without fear, always trying to be in front, playboy of the era, James Simon Wallace Hunt. The other was more tactical, always seeking perfection, always straight talking, to win was his only direction. In 76, he seeked the championship every hour, the no-nonsense Austrian Niki Lauda. Rivals on the track, but they always had deep respect. Hunt lived for the moment, Lauda always had time to reflect, both eager to gain pole position, gain the points to win. Lauda wins another race as Hunt takes a spin. Then one day at the old racetrack called the Nürburgring, fans all over the world witnessed the most terrible thing. Lauda's Porsche crashed and went up in flames. Drivers tried to get him free. He would never be the same. He returned to the racing track to everyone's surprise. They saw his face but couldn't believe their eyes. The whole world applauded the courage of this man, but to win Formula One was his only plan. Last race took place in Japan, where the rain did fall. This was it. The winner would surely take it all. Halfway through, Lauda left the race without shame, as Hunt came third to win the final game. End poem.
Wow. What an interesting story about Formula One racing. I don't know anything about this sport, mind you, but I think this is the first time I've read a poem about sport. No, it might be the second. But it's the first time that I get a story the way that I got it with Phil. His rhyme scheme is fantastic. Really, really good cadence, and he didn't make it feel like, you know, usually when people rhyme, sometimes it feels like they're forced into choosing certain words. He doesn't feel like that at all. It felt the natural. It flows really well. He's really, really skilled, I think, at that. I don't think I've ever felt at any point that any of his rhymes were forced, or that they pigeonholed what he wanted to talk about. But the story that he told was great. These two rivals and eventually how the sport sort of damaged one of them, but he came back swinging, you know, and he did his last race and he left it without shame. It's really a very inspiring story. And he says in the author's note that they were rivals on track, but they became friends because of their shared experiences on the track. And so it was a very respectful rivalry, I think. And that's fantastic, because that's great sportsmanship, in my opinion. You know, not all athletes have that respect for their contenders, I mean, you see it all the time. Basketball players disrespect each other every day. But this was really a very inspiring story on many levels, and I really enjoyed the way that he told it. And the fact that Florida came back and break, even though apparently half of his face was burned off and his lungs were full of smoke. I mean, to go through something so horrific at the hands of something that you enjoy doing, something that you love and you're passionate about. Most athletes, after that, they lose their passion for the sport. You know, they get scared that, oh, maybe this is going to happen to me again. And he didn't. He went through this experience and he overcame it to the point of saying, look, I'm not going to quit. I'm going to go back and I'm going to do what I feel it is that I'm meant to do. That message alone is extremely, extremely inspiring. I think this was a wonderful poem, Phil. Thank you for bringing it. Racky Poo, would you like to comment?
Yeah, I really enjoyed this, Phil. I like that you talked about the Formula One racing, and I'm going to poke fun at wrestling a little bit because when you watch, you know, a show like wrestling, you know, you talk about rivalry. You never know if it's made up, if it's behind the scenes, or if they're really, you know, going out for drinks afterwards and buying each other dinner. It's one of those things, even down to the injuries. It's like, you know, oh, my God, he broke all his ribs. And then, you know, 2 weeks later you see him on the golf course. It's like, didn't he break your ribs? You know, you can't fake that in racing, you know. It's one of those things. And that, I think, is where that mutual respect really comes in. Because, you know, both of them being racers know what it takes to actually do the job. And, you know, people that sit in armchairs like myself, you know, can sit there and say, oh, well, all you got to do is mash the pedal and turn the wheel left. You know, I know it's a lot more than that. But he actually experiences that. So only he really knows, you know, what's involved in doing it. So that respect that he has for his other competitors is probably a lot more genuine than, you know, some of that fake stuff that you see in other sports and things like that. So I really appreciate that he brought that out and gave us a true story on top of it. And like Mocha said, you know, he used a very deft pen. It takes some talent to take a story like that and rhyme it. You know, I've done it with a couple of jokes, and sometimes it just doesn't work. You can't find the right words. It doesn't sound right. It sounds forced. You got to manipulate the situation a little bit. You gave us a true story, and you know, from beginning to end, and chronicled this guy's history a little bit. So, you know, I really appreciated it, Phil. You did an amazing job with this.
Agreed. I love edutainment. I love learning stuff when I read people's poetry. Jay, you get last comment.
Yeah, the way I look at it is F1 racing. You don't have a top to your car. You got no open cockpit, you know, and I think about that when they're racing and the adrenaline and the extreme that they have to be going through, seeing everything that's around them. What was amazing that I found is that Niki Lauda, he lived to the age of 70 years old, and Hunt only lived to the age of 45 years old. Now I'm like, you know, they both lived their lives the way they wanted, but Hunt ended up, they both ended up dying in their sleep, and which was kind of interesting that both friends ended up passing away the same way, but in real life they ended up becoming friends because of the great trials that they went through. I think, like you said, Phil the poet can write anything he wants, and he writes it so freely, nothing forced at all. And the way he reads it, he brings it to life. And I really appreciate the way that he does that, and I thank him again for bringing that wonderful, wonderful poem to this to this show. I know me and Becky, we're used to seeing stock cars. Both of us having lived in North Carolina, and that's the big thing down there are the stock car races. And because they were originally running away from the cops in the moonshine, and that's how that type of racing came to life. And so to see a type of race where you don't have anything over your head, just a little ball sticking out, which is your head, that kind of scares me. I won't deny that. That type of reason just kind of freaks me out a little bit when I see that. It, you know, one little thing and that whole thing ends up absolutely crazy. If anybody wonders what F1 is, check out, was it the second Iron Man, I think, where Tony Stark gets in the car?
Yeah, I think so.
Yep, there's your F1 right there. That's scary as hell.
You know how the dog feels sticking his head out the window.
Then why do they do it?
Tradition is what it is. They started like that years and years ago.
Head out the window.
No, I meant the dog.
Oh, why the dog does it. I don't know. They're trying to get air because it's kind of cramped up inside of a car. Iron Man 2, Gonzo says. Yes,
I don't know.
Indeed.
I think he likes all the wind view.
But they hate it when you blow in their face.
Weird, right? Maybe it's because your breath stinks. I mean, they have like...
Oh, my breath stinks. You never smell my breath, girlfriend. Okay, so don't talk about my breath.
All right.
I'm minty fresh.
All right. I think what we'll do from here...
Your dog disagrees with you.
Down, boy, down. We're going to get Nine of Hearts going next, and here we go.
Woo, Nine.
Bending of the light, my Nine of Hearts. The mirrors do lie. A kingdom hide, the tricks in the angles they say. In line of your sight, there lay a mirage. Arise and surrender to sway. Arise, they do breathe the words long said, inscribed in primordial ink. Reciprocal hints for oblivious men. A progeny sentence to think. Cave dwellers we were, and thus are we still. In tunnels of ice, carved and glazed. Depicting a riddle designed for mankind. A timeless and loveless dark maze.
Wow, this is freaking amazing. Want to say hello in Croatia. Nine of Hearts is there, and this is an international broadcast, and we're so glad to have everybody who is listening from around the world tuning
in. Croatia?
Yes, Nine is in Croatia. This is absolutely... Nope, he's in Croatia, and that's where we get our Croatian audience from. But I want to say this is.
I was like, how do we know in Croatia?
Yep, it's Nine of Hearts. What a wonderful read! What a wonderful poem. This has such depth to it. It's kind of like an introspective. Of the reader, you know, it's It's not, you know, some, it can be an introspective of the writer, but this time it's an introspective of the reader saying, okay, you're reading this. What do you think of this? How do you relate yourself to this? And I love that type of write that can make you absolutely think and question yourself and see yourself within the movements and within the actual words themselves. And I love this. The mirrors do lie, a kingdom hide, the tricks and the angles, they say. And his rhyme scheme was fantastic. The overall poem itself was just absolutely wonderful. The read was incredible. And I really, really enjoyed this piece. Excellent job, 9. And Rack, what do you think?
Yeah, I like anything that'll question your perspective or change your perspective. That opening thought is very multi-layered because, you know, when you say mirrors lie, that brings about so many different thoughts in my head about, you know, how people see you, how you see yourself, how, there's more to someone than meets the eye. There's a lot of different things that are all wrapped up in that one single thought. So, you know, the fact that he used that in a brevity was brilliant because, yeah, that one sentence contains so much information. I'm getting, you know, brain overload from something, from when I read thinking about something like that because, you know, just changing someone's perspective, you know, changes the, a whole argument or a whole point of view, sometimes even the direction that someone's life takes. So that's, you know, very profound. And it's something that, you know, I'm constantly chasing after myself. It's like, how do you look at this? You know, when someone does something, you know, are you so ready to believe the worst in them? That all comes from perspective. So, you know, it's how you look at something can change everything about the situation in general. Great, right?
Wonderful. And I agree. I couldn't agree with you more. The way that is presented. Mocha, what do you think about that?
I think I'm quickly becoming a Nine of Hearts fangirl, even though he's my co-high. I really, really love the way that he writes. He has this thing where he's very talented at bringing out I want to say darkness, but it's not quite darkness. There's a little bit more nuance to it than just being straight dark, you know? It's like shades of gray, where it's not quite really dark. You're not, you know, plunging into the depths of sadness or whatever, but it's not love and light either. It's real, you know? It's somewhere right in the middle, something that leaves you contemplating and feeling and just marinating in it for a while. And getting to hear his voice read it makes it all the better because his voice just complements that. I think he has a beautiful voice. I'm so glad that he's on our shows and giving us audios now. And I'm so glad that he's here on the board, shout out 9. I agree with Rack in that this poem is very complex, you know. He does a lot with just 3 stanzas. Saying, mirrors do lie, a kingdom hide. That's perception he's talking about. And then he goes to tricks in the angle, they say, in your line of sight, mirage, horizon, surrender to strength. That's perspective he's talking about there, you know? So there's multiple different concepts layered within this poem, and he does it quite effortlessly. I have to say it's beautiful. I love his line. He's so poetic. Our eyes, they do breathe the words so unsaid, inscribed in primordial ink. Like, that right there is pure poetry. It's poetry about poetry, you know, because things inscribed in primordial ink, that's kind of what we do as writers. All of these things that we sort of lie to ourselves about when we look in the mirror. When it comes out on paper, you can't lie anymore. You know, it's really tough to do that, to lie on paper or in poetry. And though I say often that not every poem is a direct reflection or can be directly related to the writer, for example, not every poem I write is about me, per se, you do always leave hints of little bits of yourself in your poetry. And those are the truth. You know, you can't hide that. You can't not do that. Even when, per se, you're doing something like a dedication poem, for example, how Dante and I collabed to the dedication for Bella, and I made sure to try and emulate Bella and write in a Bella-esque form, there's still a lot of me in there, and there's still a lot of Dante in there. Not enough to say that, you know, we can write and fully embody. You read it and you can tell this is not really a Bella poem. It's just a Bella dedication, you know? And you only get that sense from reading people's poetry and connecting to those little bits of themselves that they can't hide, that is inscribed in that ink that I'm talking about. There's so much that you can hear from this poem, and I think it was really masterfully done. Nine, thank you very much for bringing this poem. I quite enjoy it. And after Nine, we have another one of my favorite people in our group who is also really, really deep and really wonderful at doing dark. Up next, we have the amazing, the astounding Gonzo.
Absolutely. Why don't we first of all welcome Lady A to the show? Hey, Lady A.
Hey, everybody.
Andrea.
Hi, Lady A.
How are you?
Doing good. What? We're just about ready to play a little Gonzo right now. So
perfect.
Get ready. This is part one of a four-parter, I believe he's doing. And this was a challenge that I gave him. And let's see where he took part one. This is called The Tale of the Yule of the Giant and the Only Boy Ever to Ever Escape.
Papa, tell us a story.
Yeah, tell us a story.
Tell us a story.
All right now. All right. Settle down, get in your bed, I'll tell you a story.
Yay!
I love it when he tells stories. Can you tell us a scary story?
No, I don't like scary stories. I want to hear a happy story.
No, I want a scary one.
No, happy.
Scary.
Happy.
Quiet down. Stop fighting. How about Papa tells you a story about both something scary and something happy?
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, this story begins a long time ago, in a little Icelandic town called Mývatn.
You know you'll never escape here in one piece.
Stealing things.
No, I hate Christmas.
Everyone dies.
I wish my mom was here.
I wish anyone was here.
She eats them, of course. What else would you do with children?
Little boy, wake up.
I wonder what Yule tastes like.
This is the tale of the Yule of the Giant, and the only boy who ever escaped Dimmu Borgir.
Jan, I don't care what you want. You're going to school.
But it's the last day before Christmas holiday. All we are doing is having a stupid Christmas party. But with a stupid fake Santa Claus.
Jan, if he hears you saying that, you're not going to get anything for Christmas.
No, I don't care. I hate Christmas.
Jan, where are you going? Jan!
Crisp wind whisked round roads which twist, bound by mounds of snow laden atop frozen ground delicate. Weary path taught misty grove fraught with dangers never sought, but the boy would not stop. Insisted did Jan on continuing his tryst, avoiding adhering to rules, persisted on resisting unwanted wastings like school, or assisting any other chore expected. He'd ignore and neglected all duties or hobbies, and was being quite naughty. Because his heavy heart was frost, suffered recent heavy loss at the cost of none other than his precious loving mother. She passed painfully away on the very last Christmas day.
I hate Christmas. And I'm never going back to my dad. Such a stupid holiday. But I am getting hungry. What's that? Who's there?
Tiny footsteps crept from out murky depth as the child sighed a breath. It was just two children. 3 feet high at best, clad in ragged vests that hung from bony chests, while their beards were withered and distressfully weird. The boy thought no danger, fraught with their anger, he would not be any lamer, as he was a king, stronger than any stranger, especially since he carried a very sharp, fairly long, locked, engaged stainless steel black switch blade. Simple boy making wages that will not show his favor.
Well, hello there, young boy. Where's your mother? Shouldn't you be home safe and sound under cover?
I don't know if you're dumb, stupid, or someone who's come into some kind of blindness, but show me this kindness. Refer to me as Highness. I clearly stand here a giant.
Oh, my mistake, since your family does ramble. To stop your grumbling, I humbly present King with a gift. Here's a potato to eat, and shall we beat the path neatly before any desire our defeat? We have 11 more brothers to meet. Come with us. I'm sure they'll be pleased.
What will you be doing?
Stealing things. So, little boy, you want to be naughty?
I don't want to be naughty. I am.
Good, 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 good. Come along, come along. Don't forget to eat your snack.
Jan's been a son, only a young lad of 10 but 1. Thought he was a giant in waiting. Perhaps one day he'd become. Naively crept with the duo of dwarves, deftly they sauntered towards a gaping stone gorge. Before he had a chance to bother the others, accosted he was by 11 of the brothers. They nearly smothered him with hugs and pats, what began as fear, lest, and he relaxed. They gave him a pint of their finest lager and danced with him late until the sun hid its light. Jan thought he spied from the corner of his eye one of the brothers with Jan's precious black knife.
Sorry, young brother. I hate to be a bother, but that knife was my mother's. You can have it no longer.
The dwarf just laughed with a smile yellow and polite. As Jan stood with pride, another brother crept up behind, put another knife just an inch from John's side.
What knife you talking about? Hey, what knife? My knife? This knife? Or his knife?
Wow. Just when you think that he can't with anything bigger or grander than the last story that he gives you, he does this. And this is just part one. I can't wait till part two. I want to know where this goes. No, Jay, he was not doing all the voices. Shout out and thank you to T-Bow or T-Bow lawyers and Sticky Fingers who helped him with the voices. This was freaking amazing. I'm still like fangirling over it. This is why I'm like a big Gonzo fan. I knew it was going to be good from the moment I hear his name. The intro, Papa, tell us a story. Just got me immediately. And
I want to hear something scary.
Jesus. It was the best. It was the best thing ever. I don't know how he does these things. How did he come up with these? Not just the ideas, but the production is so well done. I can't believe he does this by himself. I mean, yes, he has co-stars for the voices, but I mean, all of the editing, the scene-to-scene setup, that's all Gonzo. The writing, that's all Gonzo, you know? Gonzo needs to have we need to get him a production studio. Let him start making movies. This is so good. I mean, I love, it's very Nightmare Before Christmas, the vibe of it. It's like a scary Christmas story. And you know what? I've always thought that, you know, some of the history behind Christmas is a little creepy. So I'm glad to see Gonzo make a creepy Christmas. It's fantastic. The story of the boy hating Christmas because he lost his mom on Christmas Day, that's sad. And him being like a miserable little shit and running into a forest, which is like how all horror movies start, right? You do the one thing that everybody's telling you not to do. Don't do that. What do? You go do it. And then you end up being kidnapped by demented dwarves. I mean, this is why you listen to your parents, kids. Rag, can you give us a more coherent comment so I can stop fangirling?
I don't know about more coherent, but I will say the subtlety of what he did, he wasn't kidnapped. They were very much convincing him that it was his idea, you know, come with us. And he decided to go. They didn't force him. So, you know, that was a beautiful, realistic twist to the story because, you know, there's people out there that do that. That's how scammers work. You know, they make you think it's your idea. And he worked that into the story beautifully. The storytelling is amazing. You know, like you said, that this could easily be a cartoon. I could see it in my brain. You know, it's really, really works well. And then the other plot, which I'm sure everyone is familiar with, you know, you try and confront someone, you know, hey, that's mine. And they're like, what, this? No, it's not, you know. Or then, you know, someone else is standing there behind them kind of backing them up because, you know, they already know they have the upper hand. They have complete control over the situation that they maneuvered you into because, you know, you want to pull out your beer muscles. Well, I'm going to show you how ineffective that is in this situation because I'm still in control as much as you think that you're bigger and badder. I'm going to prove you wrong. So, you know, he wound all that up into that cliffhanger. That was a great job.
Yeah, I can't wait for part two, right? Like, I want to see what happens. Does he get eaten? Because somewhere in the beginning, he has a little voice. He has a little voice saying, "She eats them, of course. What else would you do with children? You eat them." Oh, God. I need to
see
where this goes.
Right,
I can't wait for part two.
That's when people are most tender is when they're children, you know, like veal.
Oh, good God. That's gross. Lady A, can you give us a comment for Gonzo?
Well, I'll just read what I wrote. I thought it was sheer brilliance, absolute brilliance, an excellent story. His voice is mesmerizing. The music was a great and perfect background. and the addition of the other voices made it so real. I think this was a stunning poem of epic proportion and just absolutely fantastic.
Oh, he dropped. Darn Blog Talk. All right. Well, I just want to add to this that this was similar to I challenged Gonzo. I gave Gonzo a challenge, and the challenge was to take an obscure Christmas legend from around the world and bring it into a poem. And what he did is more than just brought it into a poem. He brought it into an epic. And once again, I cannot wait to see where he travels from this. Well, hello, young boy. Where is your mother? I love that. I love that. This is so great when the little boy goes, I don't want to be naughty. I am. And it was just so clever the way he put all of this. I just absolutely loved it. And everybody spot on. Yeah, challenge accepted. Part two is finished already and will be submitted for Thursday's show. Listen to that. And part three should be ready for next Sunday. Part four, the finale, Thursday the 23rd. You ready for those, Mocha?
I'm more than ready for those. Although, I mean, next week, I mean, Thursday, you know what we're doing on Thursday?
Yes, Thursday. Okay. Oh, my gosh, Thursday. The X Factor.
That was going to be great. That's the X Factor. You know how I'm always making comments about certain romantic or, you know, non-romantic poems on all poetry being about my ex? Well, guess what? Ladies and gentlemen, for next week's episode of The Living Room, The X Factor, we want to hear poems about your exes or your past relationships. You don't have to be specific. You don't write about a particular ex, but it needs to be about a past relationship. It could be one that was great. It could be one that was not so great. We're not going to tell you where to go. It's just talk to us about your ex.
You're not going to tell us where to go. We're going to tell you. You're
yes.
not going to tell us where to go.
Talk
We're
about
going
it.
To tell our exes where to go.
Yes. There you go. Talk
no,
about
I'm
exes.
Not even gonna...
There we go. All right. We got a little treat here. We got an audio from another new person, JEG325, also known as John. Great to have him aboard as well. And hello to Naomi. X's, that's right. Naomi, you can sum them up all in one poem if you want. There you go. Try that one. That's what I'm planning to do. All right.
Wow.
And this is, here we go, a little JEG, a sky painted with silence.
The poem is entitled, A Sky Painted with Silence. Not a single bird chirped in trees, nor did the wind whisper to me. Clouds passed by with no refrain, twilight sky but a noiseless sea. No crickets to announce eventide, nor did waves crash on the beach. The stars spoke not a single word, though it seemed they were in reach. Bleak hues of black existed there, in the voiceless world's reticence. Once you left, you took my sound, leaving me a sky painted with silence. The end.
Wow. This is absolutely fantastic. I love the way that John presented this with such power and such raw emotion. And this is just, it cuts. You know, there's times in our lives when we lose someone, when they walk away, when they leave us, that they turn us into that one thing that has regrets and what ifs and all of this stuff. And this is really one of those poems that really reaches hard. Talking about some of the exes, there you go. This would fit right in. Lady A, what do you think of that poem?
Well, I really liked it. I thought that it was very futuristic even. And, yes, I think you can apply to it to a current relationship or a breakup, you know, when somebody's world crashes in for any reason. And it was very... an awakening that really hits you right between the eyes. I thought it was great.
Wonderful comment, Raconteur.
Yeah, I took it as a poetic way of saying a picture's worth a thousand words, because he's talking about, you know, the stars and everything else, but they're not speaking, but they're really, they are speaking to him. He's sitting there writing about them, so, you know, they're saying something, you know, just not in a conventional way. So, yeah, I really enjoyed it.
I agree with that. You know, sometimes when someone leaves, all you hear is silence, and the silence becomes that scream that really tears us apart. Mocha, what do you think about it?
Oh, I think this was really intense, actually. The idea of a world without sound, I'm very deeply attached to sound. I'm very in love with music and acoustics and all of that. So just thinking about the idea of losing sound is harrowing to me. And it's almost a little bit apocalyptic, what he describes. No crickets to announce the eventide, nor did waves crash on the beach. The stars spoke not a single word, so it seemed they were in reach. There's a little bit of hope in that ending line there, but really what hit me was, nor did waves crash on the beach, because I'm an island girl. I go to the beach forever, like a million times. I grew up on the beach, practically. But, you know, the sea is one thing that I consider a constant, you know? You would say things like, if the world were to end and humans were all gone, the sea would still roar, the stars would still twinkle in the sky, trees would still grow, and like, the sun would still shine, and you think all of those things would continue happening. But just the idea of, you know, the sea not meeting the shore anymore, that's a real heavy sense of finality there, because when does the sea stop rolling, you know? That never happens. So for that to happen, it's an apocalyptic ending, in my opinion. It's very, very heavy to think about. A sky painted with silence reminds me of the song The Sound of Silence, again. And I think it brings back that similar feeling. And I love the picture that he chose with the quote. I don't know, was that a prompt? I don't know. But it says, distance doesn't separate people, silence does. That's just, like, it's so true. This was on the front page a day ago. Deserving. Very, very deserving. I mean, you did so much with just the images. And he has a really, really nice texture of voice. Like, he sounds like one of those people that reads audiobooks for a living, you know? He's just intense enough that you can feel emotions and yet tranquil enough that you are calm and sort of soothed by hearing him. And I think that works really in his favor for this style of poem that he did. I'm very impressed with this. Jag, thank you for submitting this to our show. And I think this is his first poem, I think, on the show.
Yes, it was.
I think it's a wonderful, wonderful introduction. All right, before we get to our next poet, let me introduce somebody as I'm very happy is here. Miss Deb. How are you, Deb? Welcome.
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. I'm happy you're here.
Me too.
Deborah Lee.
All right.
Hello.
Up next, we have none other than Lady A.
On the board, okay.
And yeah, you're on the board.
Thank you. And this is called Frisian King. He is the spirit of the wind, onyx black, blue tinged. He is freedom, no man, no halter, no saddle or bridle. He is strength, brawn, built for endurance. He is beauty seen, his form to be reverenced like Chapel Sistine. He is majesty, magnificent, unbroken, wild, spirited, equine, looked upon in awe, worshipped for his magnificence. Stallion, extraordinaire, Frisian, Netherland royal bloodstream, mane and tail, thick silk, back flowing in a gallop, rider's dream. He is dancer, high-kneed prance, gait peculiar to the breed, knights in heavy armor carried into battle on their Frisian steed. 15 hands high, calm temperament, proud stance, he is poetry, an echo asking a shadow to dance. He is royal, he is wild, born untamed, forever to run free, along river waters, hills and knolls, thundering hooves, trot, canter. Turn a pirouette, rearing, boxing the air, claims his domain. He is champion, reigning king. A darkened world, he brings light in. End poem.
That was gorgeous. I love what you did with that word bank. And your style of writing really, really suits this topic. You have a way of really, I'm pretty sure this is not a word, but I'm making it a word, majestifying things that you write about. You bring that little touch of class to a lot of your writes, and I appreciate that. I loved your title. It was perfect. For what you're writing about. There's something else I was going to say. Don't distract me, Rex. You're not
helping.
Thank you
very much.
No, but really, horses are very majestic, magical creatures. And if anybody's actually ever ridden horseback or into a farm and, you know, been able to interact with horses and pet them, they are a very interesting animal. You look into their eyes and you can see consciousness that they have. And there's something about standing there just next to one, this thing that she says is 15 hands high, calm temperament, proud stance. That's really what they are like. They're really quite majestic. I could completely understand how we turn horses into things like a Pegasus and a unicorn, because they really do give you that sense of magic, just existing as they are. And they're the ultimate symbols of freedom and power and strength
as well, I think. And you embodied that so, so well in this poem. You really, like, you're so down to the nitty-gritty of every detail. I don't think there's anything that you could have possibly left out about horses in this poem. And
I
think
so that's much.
Really, really awesome. It's very intelligent, very well done. Racky Poo, first comment goes to you.
Oh, awesome. You know, I really like it's kind of a tribute to horses. I mean, they are majestic and beautiful. And I like that you said hands, because that's how they measure horses, is in hands. You know, there's just subtle little things like that that kind of connect the topic and give it that realistic, relatable feel. It was beautiful. And, you know, there is a lot that they take into the fantasy world that you know, you boil down to what, you know, what it's based on, you know, the muscles and everything else, how strong they are. And, you know, like Mocha mentioned, you know, if you look into a horse's eyes, there really is that sense of being and intelligence. They're beautiful. This was like the poem. You did a great job with it.
Thank you very much. They're very intuitive because they, like dolphins, they use horses for healing, like with kids with disabilities and kids with fears, and they're very human that way, because they can sense that there's something perhaps wrong, and they're gentle in their approach with especially with kids. I think they're most magnificent horses. Thank you so much, both of you.
I like that you mentioned that they use horses for healing, because in Tokyo we actually have a group called Healing with Horses. And
oh, wow.
This is what they do. They care for horses, and they allow people to come visit them, and sometimes you can see them. I have a video of them. I wish I could post videos on all poetry, but there's a video of them sort of walking the horses along the beach at sunset. It's the most beautiful thing you've seen, and their parents are walking alongside them. The kids are the ones on the back of the horses. It's really quite a beautiful sight. I didn't know that they actually use them for therapeutic reasons, but that makes a lot of sense to me now, healing with horses.
Yes, wonderful. Thank you.
Can I have your comment? The button.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't hear my name. Yeah, please. It's a gorgeous poem, and it is filled with descriptions and colors, and it gives a mega heritage to the horse. It brings him, it gives a credence to his existence. It was very well done.
Thank you, Deb. And Jay, last comment goes to you.
Yeah, horses are absolutely amazing. They have that ability to relate to people, but only certain people have that special it factor. You know, there are some people that come up to horses and the horses never are keen to them, and then there's some people that can come up to any horse in the world, even ones that don't like people, and all of a sudden they're absolutely calm and relaxed. That I love that factor. You brought in such amazing words into this great character. And I love how you created and molded almost a sculpture in itself, and that's kind of what horses are. They're like a living sculpture that just absolutely blend into everything. Amazing job, Lady A.
Thank you so much. Wow.
Nay.
All right. Next up, we have Deborah Lee. Deb, you're up.
Okay, thank you, thank you. This is called Can't Ever Keep From Falling Apart. And here we go. Mozzarella moonbeams light at night. Goldenrod sun rays light up the day, and every clock tick between the two, you're the face that this brain displays. In sleep, too, tugged into the magnetism, skin searches for you. My brain comes undone. Blended to all the blockades, eyes are shaded from the view of the neon sign that blinks, flashing an arrow, pointing to paths out of the ache. My body just lays neath the quilt, tucked in a space that you're mine, showing me with you. At dawn, two eyelids flutter, sweeping the lashes over cheek flesh, biting to stay wrapped in the fantasy nestled with you as bodies mesh, coming undone. But the stream of transparent beams toss light through the window glass, animating shadow puppets that salsa on the stucco as lights pass. Those silhouettes whisper to me in rhyme, broadcasting the blow by blow, calling for you like the announcer on the radio. Wind sets the curtains in motion, daylight chases the fantasy. Coffee cologne pulls me back, then eyes lift, snapping me out of sleep, leaving me battling this itch, fueled by my need for you, by the hunger for you. So, who do you need when you come undone? And Paul?
Oh, this is absolutely fantastic. There's so much power. I'm looking at that picture with the body pillow there. How many of us don't sleep holding on to something, just grasping a hold of something if we don't have someone with us? And that's definitely.
Don't call me out.
You either. yeah. No, this is absolutely great. This is absolutely great. I love the concept of it, but it's something that we never want to wake up from. And I love how you put that there. Fighting, battling, just trying to knock it down. Keep going, keep going. We don't want to stop. But it happens, it stops. That was absolutely fantastic, Deb. Wonderful, wonderful job. Lady A, what do you think of that one?
Thank you, Jay.
Yeah, I thought it was really great too. It was emotional and image filled and painful too at times, and I thought it was beautiful.
Thank you.
And Raconteur.
Yeah, there's a beautiful sense of longing in that. And, you know, like I love to say, is unfortunately relatable. you kind of captured that line between being half awake, you know, it's a dream, but it's reality, but it's not. Oh, and it's a beautiful place to be sometimes. And it's definitely a place that you don't like to leave.
Thank you, Raconteur.
And Mocha.
I love it. I do love it. It is a bit relatable. Like Rock said, you don't want to have to relate to it, but you do. It hit me right in the chest, which is why I'm a little flustered for words right now. Can I just say, though, I love the turn of phrase, mozzarella moonbeam, because I never would have thought of that, but it makes complete sense, and it's very cute. Deborah's descriptive language is always on point. I think I will continue to say that she has one of the best descriptive vocabularies on all poetry that I've seen.
she goes everywhere from colors to textures to emotions, and it's really beautiful. In Sleep 2, tugs into the magnetism, skin searches for you. God, I love this feeling. It's the worst feeling, too, because it's like Frack said, it's like you woke up out of a really beautiful dream, and now you're just sort of laying there on your bed with the disappointment that, you know, your bed is empty. You're the only one in it. And yet, somehow you can feel almost ghosts of this other person lingering with you. Mm. And it's there, but not there. You know, it's that sort of limbo feeling of longing and wanting, and it's sad. It's sad, but very beautiful. I think the ending line, oh man, the ending line. Who doesn't sit there and think about, like, especially when you're far away from that person, or let's say perhaps you guys don't, you know, talk anymore, or whatever the case may be. You sit there and you, like, stare out into the window and think, wow, I wonder what this person is doing now. I wonder where you are, like, who are you sleeping with now that, you know, you're not in my bed anymore? It's a horrible feeling. It's a really horrible feeling. But, you know, I think everybody's kind of been there once.
She reached out and hugged the cat and got mauled for it.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. And this is going to be part of the show for Thursday right there, Mocha. Remember, Thursday on the living room, it's the X Factor, all about your exes.
All about those past relationships, honey bunny. It's going to be quite an emotional show. I need to make myself mentally prepared for all the flashbacks.
All right. Talking about mentally prepared, I think it's time to play Mocha's poem right now. So here we go.
Oh, yay. I wanted Deb to hear this.
Stygian Tongue by Mocha 868. Catch the locomotion thoughts, blazing by like asteroids. Pluck the neon foxglove flutes, pressed between the grimoire pages. Bottle and jar the poisoned potpourri, journal it to last the ages. The looping postulation boils bubbly in the cauldron. Will the potion be filter or bane? One will not know till the tasting. Chanting voice rises into the ether on chimneys of dragon's blood smoke. Glowing green eyes mirrored in the crystal ball, watches scarlet bleed from blushing young rose, feeding on her oozing passion as the elixir of life. But the wonder-working white witch fears no curse of illiteracy. Warden watches over her workshop. Toff trained her in his theses. Her quill flows with key. She has no need to be any existence other than she. End poem.
That is fantastic. The way she brings that together, I love how she incorporated that picture you gave her, Deb, into the wording here and the way that everything was brought out. You know, all you can be is who you are. And no matter what the forces are of this world on the outside, pushing in, trying to change who you are, making you someone that you're not, if you can't, you know, ultimately you need to stand up and you need to be, you need to accept yourself for who you are. And if people can't accept that, you know, forget about them. Because it's not worth it. I love that the wonder-working white witch fears no curse of illiteracy. You know, she's who she is, and she has no need to be any existence other than she. That is a brilliant ending to a brilliant poem. Wonderful job there, Mocha. Deb, what do you think about it?
I'm on the mute button going, me. Okay. Starting with the opening, catch the locomotion thoughts blazing by like asteroids. That's like a vivid, bold, brilliant beginning there. And as you went through, I totally forgot there was even a word bank because it's flawless. I'd have to go look for the words. That's how sometimes word bank words stick out because people don't know what to do with them, but that's definitely not the case. And I like the details and the ingredients, per se, like the dragon's blood. And anyway, I have to say, aside from the brilliance of that, that works its way up to you realizing that, you know, the work of a white witch is in the light, and you believe in what you're doing, and you have faith in yourself, and she has no need to be any existence other than she, you know, totally outstanding. But listening to you read it was like hiding in the bushes, watching a witch do her incantation and being mesmerized and entranced in the words, and you couldn't look away even if you wanted to. So it was quite hypnotic and an excellent, excellent poem. Wow.
Thank you, Dan.
And Rack, what do you think?
Yeah, beautiful storytelling. You know, I like the idea of, you know, the white witch, because all too often, you know, especially it seems more so around old poetry, there's the darkness, and nobody really talks about, you know, the light, and not so much the fairies, but just the fact that, you know, there's other kinds of magic. And, you know, you bring that out and remind us that there's, you know, in everything, that there's a balance, a duality. I like that most of all. But, you know, again, you know, the words that you picked from the word bank definitely fit your style of writing. You know, I'm very picky. Sometimes I won't even enter a contest or whatever if I see a word bank and I'm like, you know, I don't like the word choices. I'm really anal when it comes to that, but, you know, that's just me. You did a great job with the whole thing, beginning to end. Lovely.
Thank you, Rakipu.
And Lady A.
Well, I thought it was beautifully read, and I wrote to the same contest and the same quote, actually, with my Frisian King. And it is interesting, you know, to use even just the same quote, but your picture is different. I find that fascinating with poetry. You can give a same prompt or a same quote and get such vast differences in the writing. And I thought this is really this is really beautiful. And I think that the last line struck me the most in it, and she has no need to be any existence other than she. And I thought that was great. Really, really well done.
And I wrote And I wrote to that as well, so, and I came up with something completely different. So there you go.
Yeah, there was only one quote. Everybody had to write to the same quote. They just got their own photo, and they chose their own word bank. And then you incorporate everything, which she did quite brilliantly.
Oh, darn freaking Blog Talk. Just dropped her again.
You lost Mocha?
Yeah, we lost Mocha again. I was going to put mine up next. Only if she shows up in the next 2 seconds. Because she's going to do everything. Yeah. All right. What I'm going to do is I'm going to change up the order a little bit. And hold off on that a little bit. So what we will do next. Darn freaking Blog Talk. Okay, I'm going to put in Rack and Tours next. Rack, are you ready to hear you?
No. Go
for it. Darn. Okay. Well, we'll do it anyways. So here we go. Here we go.
Windows to the Soul by Raconteur. Limpid pools of piercing green invading my dreams, reflecting absolute annihilation, accompanied by a chorus of silent screams. Shimmering saline soldiers marching relentlessly across an opalescent canvas, framing her artificial smile, denying anything is amiss, recognizing myself in her anguish. I can't help but fall, if it means accompanying her through life's journey, I'm prepared to tear down that wall. Slowly reassembling our broken pieces, occasionally mistaking hers for mine. A vast contradiction of pure and filthy, embraced and entwined. I awake trembling, sheets soaked with cold sweat, confusing dreams with reality, especially when the past is impossible to forget. End poem.
Well, doesn't this just bode well off of Deb's poem? I got to admit that, you know, it is. I read that last stanza. I wake trembling, sheets soaked in cold sweat, confusing dreams with reality, especially when the past is impossible to forget. Yeah, that is Deb's poem right there. You two just played off each other so freaking brilliantly. I love the line, shimmering saline soldiers marching relentlessly across an opalescent canvas. I have never heard of a tear described that way, or tears described that way, and I think that that is absolutely freaking brilliant. Rack, this is amazing. I just absolutely love it. Deb, what do you think about this one?
Well, yeah, I have to tell you that when I listen to Raconteur read from his Hurt Locker, it kills. I mean, it's just always so full of emotion. Normally trying to grab you by the heartstrings and tug, not normally, it always just does. Slowly resembling our broken pieces, occasionally confusing hers with mine, a vast contradiction of pure and filthy embrace and entwined. It's just like, man. Slowly resembling our broken pieces, occasionally confusing hers with mine. I think that's a prompt, Rack, that little two-line piece there, but the entire poem
Did I write reassembling or resembling?
Slowly. Oh man, you said no. I read it wrong. Still,
okay.
Slowly reassembling our broken pieces. Although it does totally change the meaning and gives it hope rather than not. So I can't believe I read it wrong. Slowly reassembling our broken pieces, occasionally confusing hers with mine. I actually like it a whole lot both ways, but I apologize for reading it wrong the first time.
I could have written it wrong because, you know, I make typos like that all the time. So
No. I don't know why it came out like that because it's clearly and correctly spelled. But, yeah, like I said,
James. Thanks, Deb.
And Lady A, what do you think?
Well, I thought this was anguished, you know, like I think that a lot of what you write is so emotional and so compelling and haunting is probably the best word I can use, and especially for this piece. And to be there was one line I wanted to read back to you. Well, I can't find it right now, but I just think that you write beautifully, and I think it's something that, especially when the past is impossible to forget. Sometimes you deal with stuff, and the past is ever present, no matter what it is. And I think you come through with that. You have this clean canvas, but in the background, the back of the canvas, the backdrop for this current scene, there's little bits of the past painted in. And you feel that with your poetry. It's really terrific. Very, very well done.
Thank you.
And I'm going to hand the mic over to Mocha.
I missed the vocal reading, but Rack knows I'm going to go back and listen to it because I'm addicted to his voice. But the poem is
Speaker.
Really, really intense. Can you hear me? Mic check? Everything good?
No volume.
No volume?
We can hear you, but it's like you're far away from the mic.
God, okay, I'm going to talk louder.
Better.
That's better. That's way better.
Rag, this was intense. Just from the jump, the limpid pools of piercing green invading your dreams, reflecting absolute annihilation, accompanied by a chorus of silent screams. It starts so dark and... but somehow you're finding beauty in this darkness, because then you go to shimmering saline soldiers marching relentlessly across an opalescent canvas. That was a beautiful line. Beautiful. And then framing her artificial smile, denying anything is amiss. How do you do that? How do you capture these emotions so effortlessly like that? Recognizing myself in her anguish, I can't help but fall. If it means accompanying her through life's journey, I'm prepared to tear down that wall. And then we get like a little bit of hope right there in the center, you know, some hope and some admiration and some more beautiful images and emotions before you talk about the broken pieces. Occasionally confusing hers with mine. Man, Doug, that really does happen when you're deeply connected with somebody. Especially if you're like me and you're a bit of an empath, you always sort of take other people's troubles, other people's emotions into yourself and internalize it, you know. In Trinidad, we have a saying for it, because we have a saying for everything, apparently. We call it Taking Panadol for somebody else, cool. Essentially, it's you're taking medicine for an illness that is not yours. you know, because you're so engrossed in that other person's darkness or their dis-ease. And, man, the ending, too, where you just wake up trembling, sheets soaked with cold sweat, confusing dreams with reality, especially when the past is impossible to forget. Like, I don't even need to comment on that. That just sort of speaks for itself, you know? Rack is so intensely emotional sometimes, but always very graceful. Even when he gives you these sort of heavy-weighted emotions, he doesn't write it like that, you know? It's that the words themselves are have a sense of grace to them. And it's very beautiful, Mrak. It's dark and beautiful. I enjoy your darkness. Not saying that I'm happy you're sad, or you were sad, but...
I know what you mean.
I do enjoy the depth of you, and I very much enjoyed this write.
Thanks, Mocha.
And up next, you're welcome. Up next, I do believe we have our king, JCA.
That's right, that's right. And I have an audio for this, so here we go.
A Benny for You, June, by JCA. For you, dance with buns on two forks. Silly, yes. And still I do. To be the Benny to your June. Grilling bread with cheese. Sands the ironing board. Skillet is the tool. Seared to the golden tan. Dance in the sun, nights in the rain. On the grass, outside the windowsills. Pick the flowers to dwell in the hair, the purple sapphire hibiscus, in the brown garnet locks. Coy, smile, swelling. Roll, swim, fly the 1,000 miles. Dawns in the caramel eyes. Ribs shudder in the cardiac rhythms. Water lilies bloom in tandem. Skiff sailing in marble seas. Get drunk, come home, grow old. You're Benny. Be my June.
And yes, it was a little silly, and I enjoyed that. I enjoy when you be a little silly, Jay. Your humor is great. I am not going to, I don't know the reference of Benny and June, but they sound like a very cute couple.
It was a movie with Johnny Depp.
Okay, I'm seeing Johnny Depp in the picture, but sadly I've never seen this Johnny Depp movie. The song, I would walk 500. Was that it?
Yes, it was. That was kind of the theme song of the movie. So, yeah.
By the Bare Naked Ladies.
I love that
song.
Oh, that was great. That was great. The grilled cheese reference. I feel like I know what that is, but I don't want to say it on air. We'll talk about it afterwards. But this poem was really wonderful, very, very J-esque. It would not be a J poem if you didn't put a crystal somewhere in there. And I know the meaning of the sapphire and the garnet, so I enjoyed that, and the hibiscus. I loved it. It was really fun. It was very cute. And always well done because, you know, you're you and you pump out auto rank 10s like it's nothing. you posted this 4 days ago, 3 days ago. It's already on auto rank 10. I don't know how you do this, but you do. You beat the system. Congratulations, Neo. You're the one.
Thank you.
Nine on the board says, and I would read 500 times more.
well, you didn't read what Gonzo said before that.
Gonzo said, I would read 500 times, and then Nine said, I would read 500 times more. It was very agreed. It's adorable. And it makes me very happy to read. You know, it's very cheerful. Racky Boo. What did you think about this poem?
Yeah, you distracted me with that background at first. I didn't pick it up until the very end. And then when Mocha said it, I had just figured it out a few minutes before she said it. So I was sitting there going, oh, man, I know that tune. I know that tune. I know that tune. Oh, and then I figured it out. But
since it started playing, I wanted to sing it.
And the Benny and June reference, if you Google, you know, Benny and June, you're going to come up with that trailer where he sticks the forks in the buns and does that little scene. So it's really cute. So you know, if you're going to mention it, you have to kind of mention that scene because that's like what everyone knows about it. Whether you've seen the movie or not, it was in the trailer and everyone talks about that scene. So that's the iconic bit of that. But, you know, not the purpose, but the intent, I guess, the message of that movie was, you know, their love for each other. So, you know, you definitely embodied that in the whole poem. You know, I would be your Benny if you would be my June. So, you know, that was beautiful, Jay.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Awesome comment, Rack. Thank you for shedding light on the movie reference. Lake, what did you think about this poem?
I like to say how I thought it was quite smart of you to write about Benny and June and using that song, because I picked it up right away, and it's a Canadian band too, the Bare Naked Ladies, if I'm not mistaken.
No, it's actually the Proclaimers.
Oh, sorry. Okay. But it's a great song, and I think you did this justice, too. I think Benny and June was kind of a torture type of movie, I think, because they're struggling with their different personalities, and one of them has mental illness, and I can't remember which one it was, but and the struggle to deal with that in a relationship, so... But I think you did a great job. I thought it was very. Did I write something already? I love this. The song background is perfect, especially based on the song and the movie Benny and June. So fantastic and fun. It was a great pen.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Awesome comment. And Dev, can I get you to comment on Jay's poem?
Yeah, I thought that the little details with the flowers and stuff, even if we didn't know the meaning behind them because they were so specific when mentioned, the reader knew they were about something important, even if we didn't understand what it was. And you're going on and you're reading it, and I kept waiting to hear but I'm like, what the hell is that? It was driving me nuts for a minute. I think that you nailed the feel. Again, the descriptions and stuff are really excellent. And in a Marvel sea, sailing in Marvel seas, you're drunk, come home, grow old, you're Benny. Be my June. But there's something about that, sailing in marble seas. That's a beautiful image right there, and the first time I ever heard that metaphor used, so that was really awesome too. So fantastic, Jay. And I'm going to beat
you.
Feet.
Thank you so much.
Great show, you guys.
Well, why don't you tell us what's going on Monday before you head out?
I sure can. On Monday is my show, Personal Prop Monday, 10 p.m. Eastern, and we'll be discussing the beauty and wonder of winter, and there are gorgeous photos that you were asked to couple with some colors and some shapes and some textures and try to finagle them all into one amazing piece of poetry like everyone always does. And I'm looking forward to sharing brilliance. And I appreciate you all. And I'm going to leave a little love and respect and head out the door. Thank you.
Thank you for calling, Deb.
Hi, Deb. Thanks for coming.
All right. Well, Naomi's been waiting long enough, hasn't she? So let's go ahead and...
Oh, Naomi, we kept her waiting.
Oh, I had her in the plan. And we will stay after. We will do a little overtime here, folks, to get everybody in. But here is... I'm excited about this. Are you ready for Naomi to sing, everybody? So get ready.
No.
Oh, my God, yes.
Broken, chaussée, malade, complètement malade. I no longer dream, I have no story anymore. I'm dirty without you, I'm ugly without you, like an orphan in a dorm. I don't feel like living life. My life stops when you leave my bed at train station. Cause you just keep coming and going, stealing pieces of me away. Stuffed into your pockets each time you run. Oh, I am broken, completely broken. Just be malade, complètement malade. You arrive, and you never know when. You leave, and you never know where. You will be soon, be 2 years, deep that you don't even care. And I, like a rock, like a sin, I hang on to you. I'm tired, I'm exhausted of pretending to be happy. I drink every night, and all the whiskeys taste the same. And all the boats carry your flag. I have nowhere to go. Cause you are everywhere, everywhere, everywhere. Oh, I am broken, completely broken. Je suis malade, complètement malade. I pour my body into your body. Like a dead bird, you've robbed me of all my songs, drained me of all my words. Yet I had talent before your skin. This love is killing me. If it continues, I'll die alone by myself by the radio, like some silly kid, imagining my voice singing, hanging on to the floor. Oh, je suis malade, complètement malade. I am broken, completely broken. Just je suis malade, complètement malade. You've robbed me of all my songs, drained me of all my words. My heart is completely sick, my soul surrounded by bricks. How do you hear me? Do you even know how much you've broken me? 'Cause yes, I'm broken, completely broken. Hashimalade, completement malade.
Yay! Yay! Go, Naomi! I will tell you what, this has such a classic French a French stage presence to it. It's like you're in the middle of a play, and you have a musical, and you have this lead that has a touch of French to her, and she's starting to sing this great soliloquy song. And that's the way I felt when I heard this. I kind of sneaked a peek of this beforehand, and I couldn't stop listening. But I absolutely love this, and the words behind it are actually so kind of sad. But I loved it. I loved every minute of it. Oh, wonderful. And now from one Canadian to the next, Lady A, what do you think?
Oh, I thought it was brilliant, too, really. Like you were saying, it reminded me of those Second World War Parisian singers that gets up and sings this lament, and you did this very well, just like that, I felt. It was very emotionally moving, very sad, and, you know, I think there was one part that said it's been 2 years, and, you know, that's a long time to long for someone who doesn't want you or cheated on you or ran off on you, you know, it's, and we all do it. We do lament and wait and hope and think, you know, maybe today or tomorrow, and yet if we thought about what they were doing, having fun and living their lives, perhaps we wouldn't be so melancholy. But you really struck home with that melancholy, and I love the touch of the French in there. Je suis malade, complètement malade. I thought that was a really nice touch because, of course, you speak that language and you are French. It's a really unusual. I like the uniqueness of it, and I like the familiarity to the wartime songs, the wartime, what did they used to call the women who would torch, as a torch song? Yeah.
Yeah.
Really, really good, Naomi.
Raconteur, what do you think?
I want to say she stole my answer, but I obviously can't because she went first. So I'm going to steal her answer, I guess. She definitely had that feel that she's describing. I really enjoyed the tune, the mixture of the English and the French. You know, you could picture her in the smoky bar sitting there and singing this. It was really, really cool.
All right. Before we get to Mocha's comment, I need to put this out. I just got word from Wayne. And his hometown has been hit by a tornado. He is safe. He is safe. But they're going to be out of connection for about the next 3 days. Just pray for the hometown. 11 people lost their lives. But like I said, he's doing well. And I wanted to share that before we went off air with the board. I want to thank Rick, Lady A, and Deb Ball for calling, Gonzo, Becky, Nine of Hearts, and Naomi for being out on the board. Mocha, for everything you do. This thing would not happen without you. I really appreciate you. Now, with that, we will go into overtime, and we are going to play and read the rest of the poems. So, Mocha, what did you what do you think of Naomi's song?
I think it was beautiful and haunting, and something about Naomi's vocals when she reaches that French line. She sounds, you can hear that she sounds a little bit broken when she sings it. She's singing it almost like when singers get to a point with a song that means a lot to them, but they're emotional and they're about to cry while they sing. I could have heard that sort of crack in her voice, you know? And I totally understand what Lady A and Rack were saying about seeing her in that that lounge
setting,
or that one of those jazzy bars where you see all the broken soldiers just drinking, and she's standing there up on the mic singing this ballad, this broken ballad of hers to the soldiers. The French line, je suis malade, means sick, in case anybody doesn't know. Complètement malade, completely sick. It's very impactful to have that be the one line in French that is repeated. I don't speak French as fluently as Naomi. I did it in high school, so I'm a little bit iffy on it. I can read French really well. But I got that line for sure. I remembered what that word meant. And it was really, really strong. I mean, even the verses saying, I no longer dream. I have no story anymore. I'm dirty without you. I'm ugly without you. I mean, it's so overbearingly sorrowful, but in a good way. In a good way, of course. We're poets. We like that kind of stuff. She had this part that actually made me giggle a little bit because it's a double entendre. She says, my life stops when you leave. My bed, a train station. Because you just keep on coming and going. I tried not to laugh for that because it wasn't supposed to be funny. But, I mean, Rack, you know what I'm talking about. It hit me.
Yeah.
Stealing pieces of me away, stuffed into your pockets each time you run. I'm not sure if he's like robbing her or stealing little bits of her naughty stuff, and that's what he's going with, in which case that's creepy. You need to stop that man from doing that. But I mean, the rest of it was, oh God, it was so hard hitting. It was so passionate, and I like a rock, like a sin hanging onto you. I'm tired, I'm exhausted of pretending to be happy. Girl, I don't know what this man put you through, but I am so sorry. I'm so sorry that anybody has to feel things like this, but you know, and don't think of me weird for saying this, pain is beautiful sometimes. Because I share a philosophy with Pretty Bird that pain is one of the constant emotions that you experience throughout life. And if you don't experience pain, if you don't relish it sometimes, then your joy is not always worth as much as it should be. You know, if you don't go through the hardships, if you don't feel at an all-time low, you'll never understand how sweet it really is to be at your high. And so the poem that we just read is an all-time low, perhaps, but you can bet your ass Naomi climbed up out of it and she's on a high again, because she's a strong woman. You cannot keep her down.
and she finds stories to write. Yeah, she's found her stories and she's found her voice again. And I was really glad to hear Naomi sing. I loved it. I love that she put in French because this is the second time I hear her speak French, and beautiful. It's one of my favorite languages. Thank you, Naomi, for bringing this poem. I loved it. And I will have to go look for the original song now.
All right. Got something extra special for you guys.
Oh, great. What's that?
I think it's time for a little Lawrence 67.
Ah! Yay.
All right.
I'm such a fangirl.
All right. And this is called King Dumb by Lawrence 67.
Let me mute myself. Hold on. Let me gather
the adventures. Okay. The adventures of Nigel the Fat Cat and his homie, Alfie, in the kingdom. Halt! Who doth go there? Nigel. Nigel and Alfie, what business dost thou have? We have to come to see the king. Dum dum, and who might you be? I be a Friar Tuck. Nigel, did he say he's a fire truck? No, I think he said he's a Friar Tuck. Oh, I once knew a chick in chat who was a friar at Kentucky Fried Chicken. Yeah, he just hung around basting all the time. Pretty crispy job, if you ask me. Yeah, what happened to him? Oh, he got fired. Fried. That was too funny, huh, Mocha? Look at JCA, he's crying over there. JCA! Keep it together, man. We're not even halfway through the skit. I can't, Nigel. And poem.
Lawrence, I love you.
He wrote that
from the rooftop.
Yes, he wrote that special for us. I love his humor. I absolutely love it. I can't get enough of it. It is freaking awesome. And thank you. Oh, my gosh. Rack, what did you think of that one?
I'm a lost chicken comment. The humor is undeniable. I like Nigel and Alfie. I thought it was a great story. It was real cool. Kingdom.
Dum dum.
Bop, bop.
Lady A, what'd you think of that?
Well, I thought it was wonderfully silly and fun, and I loved your acting abilities in it as well. I thought that was really great. Let me just see here what else I can say. I've lost my spot here again. Here we go. Yeah, I love things like this that are so creative and fun to do and for you to take it on like this when somebody else wrote it, I thought that was brilliant too. And it just was a really unique piece and made me smile and laugh.
Yes, absolutely. And and Mocha.
That's what I thought. You better let me comment. Because, I'm like the biggest Lawrence fan here. I mean, I know not everybody gets what he writes, but I think it's so brilliant. I mean, Lawrence breaks the fourth wall in every single one of these Nigel and Alfie poems. And I think that is so awesome to do, because I often try to think about, oh, I would love to break a fourth wall some way in poetry, and I can never figure out how to do it. It is actually a little bit more complex than it seems. But Lauren seems to do it with, like, complete ease, to the point where he's, like, anticipating our reactions to us reading the poem. Getting to the point where Alfie's like, wasn't that funny, huh, Mocha? Because he knows that I'm going to be cracking up in the corner. Trying to keep myself together from, like, I laugh at the dumbest shit. I'm not even going to laugh. I giggle at everything. But Nigel and Alfie are so witty. Like, I can't not love it. I mean, I'd be a fryer tuck. And Nigel's like, did he say he's a fire truck? It's so cute. And, like, chicken shit, did you get it? Please tell me you got it. It was such a great joke. He just slipped that in there, like, so easily. This was a great, great dedication to the kingdom. I mean, and then JCA at the end, like, keep it together, man. We're not even halfway through the skit. Oh, God, I'll never not laugh at this. I will never also not emphasize how much I want to see this put into an animation, because this is the stuff that great adult cartoons are made of.
11 herbs and spices.
11 herbs and spices, yeah.
Wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you, Jay. Also, you committed. I gave you that. You gave different voices for Nigel and Alfie, and dare I say, your read was as good as Raz.
Thank you.
Hey, Mocha.
Appreciate.
You ever hear of a guitarist called Buckethead?
I have not.
Yeah, go find him on YouTube somewhere. He's the bucket on his head is a bucket of Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Why?
I have no idea. It's ridiculous, but that's his trademark.
All right. Okay. Here's what we got coming up next. We got a little Titus for everybody.
I had a Titus shot.
Sprinkling of hops. Harmonia. Gazing through a grand portal centerpiece, usurps the opinion best portrayed by scowl, distinguished clamor, the conformity to ease love lorn, the affirmative guilt-ridden prowl, the haze of syzygy, included as the backcloth, the meaningful throw, holds as discomfort bestowed upon, as strife its form has swelled, half hidden, the wife becomes more fraught. Phosphenes, to include the gaze of the gods, with this cromulent theory about harmonia, Cadmus and his portrayal, conscience prods to clarify, then pertaining to this Veronia, denouement is the fountain's harp, it guards to lift subverts of water with effluent fleck. Confined with ample room, her will discards itself to alter shape, puts it around her neck. Adorned as lowly arches tighten with effect, the water is upon each row now lowered. Proclivity has surrendered notice to reflect harps. A love sprinkling of doubt is heard. Wow. What a brilliant way to describe this painting. Wow, I love it. I absolutely love it. It's amazing. What, Mocha, help me here.
Oh, you're going with me first?
I meant for you to take the comments, and I just jumped in there, and I'm like, what's so spectacular with this? I'm like, ah.
Okay, well, you know what, before it gets old in his mind, let's let Rack go first, and then we can go, and Lydia.
See, now, I can't help but after Nigel and Alfie, I know that was water running, but it sounded like chicken frying after Nigel and Alfie. I'm sorry, Titus, but it was just unfortunate that they had a poem about frying chicken before your beautiful water poem, because, you know, like everyone said, well, like they started to say, but lost their tongues. You know, I unfortunately can't see the painting that you wrote to, but obviously you had the water playing in the background, which is normally very soothing and beautiful. But again, the subliminal frying chicken just kind of derailed me with that. But your words absolutely made up for it, because, you know, the way that you write is always stunning and enchanting, and, you know, you can't not listen to the way that you describe these things, and it was just very moving and beautiful.
All right, and Lydia is still with us. Yes, Lydia, what do you think of this poem by Titus?
Well, first of all, I absolutely love Titus. I love his eloquence. I love his intelligence, his tremendous English, the command of the language, his enunciation. I have to say that every time I read his, it's just impeccable. And this story, I've read it a couple of times. I'm trying to see what it's about. The AN is down there, and I didn't quite finish it. So, but I'm going to say that this harp was trying to protect, was protecting this well somehow, or her song was protecting the well. I'm not sure. But I think that the people were upset about it because they wanted the water. Now, I could be entirely wrong, but I think they got rid of the harp and took the water, but it must have been at a time when there was a drought and they were rationing the water, because then after they did get to the water, it was no more. So I thought that was he's so brilliant in his topics of writing as well, and that's my interpretation of this painting/poem, and I thought it was great. I wish I could be more intelligent about it, but I need to know a little bit more, and I'm going to delve into his AN better and see what it is exactly saying. But that's what I got out of it, and I thought it was great. And this was done for the Winter in the Park. Winter Park paint out this year, I think. Or maybe no. Oh, it was 5 years ago, so no, it must have been one that was 5 years ago. But Titus is such a terrific writer, and he's old world, old school, and I love antiques.
it sounds like a mess, what you're describing with the water and the guardian of the water. And then when they took the harp away, they couldn't get to the water. It was gone.
Oh, so the harpist was there so the water would keep flowing. Is that what you're saying?
I think so.
Oh, okay. And that's how they got their water. Oh, I was on the opposite end. I thought that she was protecting the water from people taking it. Isn't this interesting? I love that.
It is. Super interesting. Jay? Oh, wait, should I comment before I let you comment, Jay?
you can if you want.
And why don't you comment together in the...
I think this was really, really amazing. But I am flabbergasted by all of Titus's writes, because they're always of this same high quality every time. Like, this man is nothing if not consistent and good. his language is ever so graceful, and he's like a perfect true definition of a gentleman when he writes. The story that he's telling, I'm still trying to figure it out a little bit because Titus has a very intricate way of telling stories, and there are a few words that I don't know the meaning of, which is another thing I like about Titus. Every time I read his poems, I find some new, beautiful word to add to my vocabulary. For example, phosphenes. I thought it had something to do with phosphorus. It does not. It's the little sort of sparkles or the light that you see in your eyes when you close your eyes, and like your eyelids, which I thought was a beautiful way to describe that. Phosphenes do include the gaze of the gods with this prominent theory about harmonia. That's so interesting. I feel like I need to know the definition of almost every single word in his poetry to accurately figure out his meaning, because he uses words with such purpose. It's always very intent, you know? It's always very purposeful. His use of words, he's a perfect command of the English language, I would say. Another beautiful word was syzygy, I think is how you pronounce that. A haze of syzygy included. It's another one I had to look up the definition for. It means like parallel or in contrast or like an opposite. I think that's amazing. As to the story,
where's the name that you're talking about?
Syzygy.
The word I'm talking about?
Syzygy?
Y-Z-Y-G-Y. Yeah, and then phosphenes was another one. That was beautiful. I had to just, I Googled Cadmus as well. He was apparently a prince of Phoenicia. Yeah, I don't know that much about Roman history to know all the princes offhand. I had to Google him. But I think the real story comes somewhere in like the last two stanzas. The nowment of the fountain's heart with guards to lift subverts of water with effluent fleck, confined with ample room, her will discards itself. It alters shape, puts it around her neck. Adorned as lowly arches, tightened with effect, the water has upon each row now lowered. Proclivity has surrendered notice to reflect heart. A love sprinkling of doubt is heard. So to me, I actually feel like he's just describing the fountain itself, but perhaps romanticizing it. To a point where I think in these lower stanzas that I just read, I think he's actually describing the flow of the water as they sort of turn the fountain off, with the water in each row now being lowered, proclivity has surrendered notice to reflect. Fountains tend to be places where people, you know, sit and just stare at the fountain and ponder things. And so I think the way that he wrote this was somewhere between not just describing the actual fountain in the art piece, but perhaps what it reminds him of personally, what thoughts cross his brain and how he can relate those thoughts to the flowing of the water, to the image of the harp being the centerpiece in this part. So to me, it sort of feels like Titus is having sort of a quiet, meditative moment, staring at this centerpiece. And again, I could be wrong. Like, I'm never 100% sure with Titus sometimes because of how intricate he is, but this was beautifully, beautifully done. I know I just took up a lot of time commenting. I'm sorry. Fantastic work as always, Master Llewellyn. I'm always grateful to hear your voice and to learn from you, because I really do learn from you every time I read you. It's like studying literature again, classic literature, and I love that. And up next, Jay, who do we have?
I think what we will do next is I will go ahead and read Nick's poem, N.J. Towers. He specifically... I thought he was too. Unfortunately, we're on overtime, so he can't call in. And for some reason, Straight Talk has messed up my... my phone line for some reason. I can call out, but no one can call in. What the hell is wrong with that? And
it's 'cause
and my
overtime.
Internet's not. No, 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 no. I'm talking about no one can call my personal phone line right now,
oh.
But I can call out. So it's definitely not my phone service ending. And for some reason, the internet got blocked off, so I don't have data either. So something's messed up with my internet right now in Straight Talk. So hopefully they'll clear that up. But in the meantime, I'm going to read this one because he just messaged me and wanted me to read it. It's called Social Standards Disrupt Economic Normalcy. And it goes like
this.
Wait,
is it on the board? Oh, yeah. Okay,
yep.
Never mind. Sorry,
yep.
Go ahead.
No problem. I see on social media all the time how government is taking away our rights one by one until there's nothing left. It even has cost to draw breath. On a planet with acrid air, we inhale death. I think we confuse capitalism with political power. Supply and demand doesn't sit in an ivory tower. Unpopular opinion. You see those people? Money is their expertise. They got their way because of their degree. Clearly, employee concerns don't matter when you try to climb up the corporate ladder. Don't tax them more. Tax them the same. Make them play our way. It's more than enough to keep the world hunger contained. There's nothing wrong with getting what you earn. Corporations abuse, that's how it works. But socialism won't solve a thing other than flat tax. We don't want their plan. How did capitalism fit in with the government covering up touching of kids with cancel culture so invited and self-defense judicially undecided? I ask again, how does that define capitalism? I met someone from Canada that told me it's much better in the land of the free. We let social media get to our heads. We end up sounding like Trump instead. Freedom fighters with button guns. Are fighting a war that's already won by the other side. Corruption defined. Socialism, capitalism, communism, one of these is not like the other. You think the big cheese won't do the same thing 4 years and things won't be the same? The new president is always cleaning up the other's mess. You see how age is affected by stress. Another tyrant, another name. Do you think the problem isn't the system, but the ones in charge? That's why things are always the way they are. Point your fingers at the true causes and why all of this is actually lost. End poem. Now, wow, there's a lot to digest in this piece, a lot. Very political, very, just a lot to dissect. It goes all over the place, but ultimately it draws down to what the media is portraying and what they want society to believe. And that has always been my opinion. That will never change from my opinion. I think that politics is politics is politics. One party in America is the same as the other party. It's just they travel and do things in different ways. And I don't trust a single bit of them. Amazing job, amazing right. Brack, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't follow politics too well, so I had a hard time with it.
No, no problem. I know Lady A's got a lot to say. Lady A, what would you like to say about this one?
Yes, yes, yes. Well, I respect his writing. I respect his opinion. I think he did a great job in expressing it in his piece. I think that there is so much to discuss if you wanted to take it apart line by line. And I think he's writing. I think we confuse capitalism and political power. Supply and demand doesn't sit in an ivory tower, and this is true. And an unpopular opinion, he's going to run into that all along. And I thought it was interesting that he wrote about, somebody from Canada said, come on, it's a much better land for the free. Of that, I can agree. However, I think that anything political, they have their own agenda, no matter what the people think or what they want. Their pockets are lined by the lobbyists in both of our countries. I think that they have their own planned agenda, which they pay people off to get it, no matter what. And I can go on. I don't know how much time we have left, but I think that I can understand his frustration. I think that capitalism, socialism, and communism, I think that I live in a socialist, a social democratic country, which does not mean socialism in the sense that it's written here, or in the sense that people think if you say the word socialism. Because the United States, as much as they don't like to think it, they have socialism. You guys have social welfare. You have unemployment. You have all kinds of government programs that are social programs. And that's what social democracy is, because you take care of your people. And that's the difference. Not socialism where you give, or you have all your money taken from you to give to those who have not. Not in the least. It's about taking care of our fellow man in the way that we can, in the way that we do. Democratic socialism is entirely different than socialism. So, but anyways, I think that I could go on and on, and I won't. But I thought it was a very good write. Like I said, I respect his opinion. It would be great to have a conversation with him on it. Yes, Canada is the best country in the world.
And Mocha, you get the last say on this.
First of all, welcome NJ Towers to the kingdom, and what an introduction. You came in with a bang. I love it. I love that you came in not holding back. You gave us something where you really threw some punches and gave us something to think about, a few things to think about. I mean, you went from environmental destruction, the fact that there's even a cost to draw breath on a planet with acrid air. By the way, I love the word acrid. We inhale debt. It's true. I mean, the pollution is a huge fucking problem. I mean, you covered a bunch of socioeconomic problems that are not just related to Canada and the USA, but I think worldwide people can, relate to this, because I'm not Canadian or American, and I can relate to a lot of the things that he's talking about. And for example, the whole mixture between the political parties and the private industry of business. For us, I don't know if this is what it's like in the States, but for us, a lot of the politics is sort of like how Olivier said, everybody's got their lobbyists and their pockets are lined, but they're lined by private companies, business owners. So it's really the companies that sort of run politics in a weird way when you think about it.
Yes.
Because they're funding the shit, and the politicians are like, okay, yeah, I'll take your money and we'll do that. Everything else. Socialism won't solve a thing. Now, I feel like
when we talk about socialism, most people, their idea of socialism comes from the very broad and yet at the same time narrow perspective of Che Guevara and Fidel Castro and what they were attempting to do with socialism. So socialism gets a bad rap, just like communism does, because the two communist countries we have, I don't know what they're doing, but according to Karl Marx, that's not communism. Just for the record, I don't know how many people actually know what the theory of communism was originally supposed to be, but what China is doing is communism. Let's just throw that out there really quick and not touch it again, because let's not talk about China, they'll find us. Cancel culture was another big thing that he mentioned that I'm very here for, and that's a sort of a millennial phrase, cancel culture, but it is a thing. It is this thing now where, because you have the internet and because everybody is so involved in everybody's lives, everybody thinks that they have a right to know everybody's business. When, for example, a celebrity, something about their past comes online, everybody on the internet is very quick to vilify them for it and to quote-unquote cancel them. So basically stop listening to their music, stop going to their concerts, and it's like being blacklisted, essentially. But instead of being blacklisted by the industry, you're being blacklisted by fans, which takes on a whole different effect for celebrities and artists. Letting social media get to our heads and ending up sounding like Trump instead is a little funny line, but that's true, that happens a lot. I can't tell you how many arguments I saw on social media with people who aligned with Trump and his beliefs versus people who did not. And it was very heated. I mean, people said some things I would not want to repeat on air because they're so shocking. They're so bad. You hear people say these opinions and you think, like, as a rational human being, wow, I can't believe that that's your real opinion and you're proudly saying this on a public forum. You should actually be ashamed of thinking that way, of being so ignorant. But, I mean, when Trump was president, ignorance reigned. No offense to the Americans. But
absolutely.
Ignorance literally reigned. And it wasn't just in the States. I mean, Trump sitting on the throne of the U.S. presidency sort of gave an excuse to every bigot in the world to just come out and let their freak flags fry. It was quite a shocker to experience, not even being American. And it had that effect all around the world.
President Cheeto.
Okay.
No, but this is back to the actual poem. This was really well done by Nick. Thank you so much for dropping this huge contemplative bomb on us. I mean, we could talk about this all day, but let's not. Thanks, Nick.
Yeah, we don't really have the time for it right now. We got 20 minutes to get through the last two poems. And Lady A.
Oh, that's enough.
Lady A, I would love you to read the next poem for us.
Okay. I shall do that. I just wanted to write a note to... I put the definitions of all those words that were in Titus's poem on the board, by the way, in case you didn't see it, because I'm sure that it's running fast, the chat board. Okay. This is by P.M. Murphy. Okay, and it's called Yesterday's Garden. Dark clutters of Freudian thoughts echo down chambers of elastic fray, where bright designs caught up on fires left to scorch us. And in the solstice we find solace in the bright indigo rivers above a skyward sight. We swam through clouds of chiseled men and collapsed all the way down, drowning the newly planted seeds. End poem. Wow.
Interesting. Your read left the staff speechless.
Jay. Yeah, it is kind of a speechless thing. Amazing poem. And I look at this, there's so much to think about in such a brevity. Oh my gosh, I'm like just still trying to absorb it all. Dark clutters of Freudian thoughts. What a way to start out a poem. Because,
right?
I'm like, that blew my mind right there. And then it kept on going. And in the solstice, we found caught up in the fires left to scorch us. And in the solstice, we found solace. I'm like, dang, this is like a dive into a person's mind, a dive into kind of the thought pattern of man itself, because there's so much that we think about, and what do we do? And this is another one of those poems that wasn't written truthfully for the writer, but it was for the reader, and I can see this a lot in making the reader contemplate. We slammed through clouds of chiseled men and collapsed all the way down, drowning the newly planted seeds. What are our consequences in what we do? And I think that ultimately defines what that last thing says. What, you know, we're doing stuff that is messing with other stuff. What do we do there? Oh man, this is great. Lady A, you read it. What'd you think?
Yeah, I really liked it, and I'll tell you why. It's very political, first of all. It's very humanistic. And so, I'm just going to start, like, the Freudian thoughts, we have all kinds of them all the time. And he talks about an elastic fray, which is, you know, they bounce back and forth. You crumble them up and they come back. And where bright designs caught up on fires left to scorch us. So there's always somebody that's creative that is inventing something that's good for mankind. And then it gets in the fires, and the fires are those big wigs that have lots of money, and then they bastardize the design so that it burns us, so that it hurts us. They bastardize what was meant for good and made it to be something bad. And in the solstice, we found solace in the bright indigo rivers. Those rivers are now polluted. And above the skyward sight, we swam through clouds of chiseled men. Now, I'm not sure. I think that those are those men that corrupt the good thoughts, the good projects, the good inventions of other men, and collapse all the way down because his prize of an invention was destroyed by these people with money, say. And then drowning all the newly planted seeds are the people who have the new ideas, and they look at what's happened in the past and they say, what's the point? And they just drown. I really like this poem.
Great comment on that one. And Mocha, you get the last comment.
Patrick stuns me every time he writes, because when you talk to him on the board or you just see him around, he seems like, no offense, Patrick, a very quiet person. And almost, some people would describe him as boring. And don't think you're boring, Patrick, I'm just saying. He's not like one of those really big outward personalities. But that doesn't mean that there's nothing going on there, clearly. Because every time he brings one of these poems, he shows us how deep he really is, to, with no prompt, nothing, just pull this out of his brain and put this on paper, you know, with no sort of
trigger. It's amazing. And just from the first line, the dark clutters of Freudian thought, that takes you somewhere from the jump. Sometimes you're not even sure where you're actually going with Patrick, because he can literally take you anywhere, like the last one where he did the sensual poem, which I never saw coming. I mean, he just keeps surprising me. Or maybe I'm underestimating him. Maybe that's, and if I am, I apologize, Patrick. But this was fantastic. Freudian thoughts echo down chambers of elastic spray. That sounds to me like horrible overthinking, where bright design caught up on fire left to scorch us. I'm going a little bit more emotional than Lydia, her interpretation is very literal and good, by the way. Freud has a lot of theories about the reflection of the human soul and what really lies in our subconscious, so that's where this is taking me. Bright design, caught up on fire, is left to scorch us. That could be sort of, you know, those memories that are so beautiful they hurt. That's the sense that line gives me. In the solstice, we found solace. That line really stood out to me because of what the solstice is. Solstice, by definition, is an event that occurs when the sun appears to reach its most northerly or southerly excursion relative to the celestial equator on the celestial sphere. And two solstices occur annually around June 21st and December 21st, which are actually coming up on the winter solstice. Solstice also presents some magical meaning to me as well. There's some significance there for people who practice things like Wicca. Every solstice is a different ritual or celebration, rather. And on the equinoxes, you have celebrations as well. And I can't quite remember what winter solstice represents, but it definitely carries a meaning. In the bright indigo rivers above a skyward sight, we swam through clouds, chiseled men, and collapsed all the way down, drowning the newly spent seas. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not 100% sure on exactly what he's talking about here. It could be more of these memories. It could be past people. It could be literally anything at this point, because there's something about the way that he wrote this that is specific and both very not specific. It's one of those poems where I feel like the writer is writing about something and they know what they're writing about, but they don't want you to know what they're writing about. And I feel like it was a little bit constructed like that. But the imagery is very stark and very beautiful. And it's amazing that this is like, what, 8-10 lines max? Not actually counting, I'm just skimming, but 1, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. But yeah, 10 lines. Awesome job, Patrick. Really, really beautiful poem. I'm going to be thinking about this one for like the rest of the night.
All right, we have one poem left. And that is for you to read, Mocha. It's from Dante.
Oh, great. Let me, sorry, my computer's a little slow. It's loading. All right. This is a heart-stopping moment by Dante 16. I got to say it. The car takes the hit. Petrified braking. The rubber is just slipping. Heart stopping moment. No more room to vent. And all I did was turning into stone. One tiny mistake and I was gone. Flashbacks to the red, 100 and X. Fists smashing on the glass roof. A tiny mistake is all there is. The moment and
All of it is gone, merely dust of remnants and rust stays in its place, while people left behind are left to remind what you did inside and home.
Oh, this is absolutely a stunning piece. It's got so much pain to it. It actually reminds me of a head-on accident I got into, which is kind of one of the scariest moments that you could attribute in life. It was amazing that no one got killed during that accident, but I think it goes much more deeper into this. This is a metaphor used for something that is like a mistake in life. It can be pretty much anything at all. And I think he did an amazing job bringing that out. And it makes a person think a little bit, okay, what is he truly talking about? What is meant by right near the end where it says, while people left behind are left to remind what you did inside. You know, that's it's like, you know, how did whatever happen affect? If I'm gone from a accident, how am I going to affect you when I'm gone? And I think that is the power in this piece. Brilliant job. Lady A, what do you think?
I could say a lot about it, but I don't really want to get too personal with it, but I agree with you that there is a lot of pain in this and something his heart's been broken. His heart's been broken. And you know, he talks about, you know, one little mistake and bang, I'm gone. And merely dust. And while people left behind are left to remind what you did inside. So his heart's broken. It could be a true car accident, too. It can be interpreted different ways. But I see it as him being banished from a relationship of sorts, or someone being banished from a relationship for a mistake made. It's heartbreaking. And all I did was turning into stone, one tiny mistake and I was gone. He did a great job on this, and it's sorrowful and well written for sure.
Excellent comment. And Mocha, you get the last say on this.
Dante, I'm really enjoying watching Dante evolve as a writer. Usually he sort of just lets everything all out, you know? He flows a lot. It's very raw. It's very uncensored. But this write, the whole tone is different. And he did this 9 hours ago, too. So this is amazing that he dropped this so soon and then immediately dropped it for the show. But it's nice to see Dante sort of restraining and channeling that power that he has with his emotions into something very direct, like this heart-stopping moment. I think it's perfectly titled. Because both of you are right in that you can take it literally, which I did a little bit, because personally I've been in like 3 car accidents, which is 3 too many for my comfort. And I was getting a little PTSD too when he was describing the fist smashing on the glass roof and one tiny mistake, and that's all there is. And sometimes the mistake is not even on your part. Sometimes it's somebody else who rams into you like they did with me, and like, your life flashes before your eyes and your head hits the dashboard. It's really a harrowing experience. It's, so many people lose their lives via car accidents. And that's really quite a staggering statistic to think about, is how many people die via roadside accidents. you know. But the metaphor of it is beautifully painful as well. All I did was turning into stone, one tiny mistake, and I was gone. Those two may be my favorite lines of the entire poem. Dante is exploring a new emotional depth, I think. I mean, he's always been dark and he's always been raw, but there's something about this. There's more complexity. There is more nuance. There's more space for people like us, the commentators, to read into it and read between the lines, just as you both did. And I think that's wonderful because that to me just indicates growth as a writer and a person, and his emotional quotient. I mean, he's growing, he's learning, he's expanding. And that, I think, is one of the most beautiful parts of this poem to me, is to see that. And he rhymes. He rhymes, he usually does rhyme, but because it's a brevity, which I think he rarely ever does, this is brevity for him, it's much more impactful. It's much more noticeable in the short space of this poem. I mean, it's really, really well done. It's very vivid. It's gripping. It's sad. It's wonderful job, Dante. You're leaving me a little speechless with all the things that I want to say about it. I'm like falling over myself. But in an effort to not take up too much time, I'm going to rant instead. But this was amazing, Dante. I'm so proud of you and your growth as a poet. Thank you for allowing me to read it, Jay.
Absolutely. And with that, we have accomplished our mission tonight. And we have gotten all the poems read.
With 2 minutes to spare. How about that?
Let's run the outro music. Okay, hold on. We need to give our thanks first, really quick.
Go ahead.
Thank you to everyone who showed up on the board. Gonzo, Naomi, Nine. Who else was on the board? They helped.
Becky.
Becky.
Becky was there.
Becky. And Lady A. Lady A for calling and participating on the board at the same time, helping us with some of the definitions from Titus's poem. Thank you to everybody who called, Rack, Deb, Lady A. You guys were amazing. You're wonderful commentators as per normal. Thank you to everyone who submitted poems for this show. We always look forward to reading and hearing your stuff, and your effort is appreciated. Thank you once again to Scientific, who does our intro and outro music and some of our graphics. You guys can email him at scyntfk@gmail.com if anybody would like to lease or purchase beats or maybe even get some graphic work done. You can do that. That's scyntfk@gmail.com. And thank you, Jay, for being my left hand and a fantastic co-host. I could not do this without you.
And thank you for being my right hand and making me right hand dominant. How about that? I can't do anything without you either. And let's hear a little moon rock rhythm here.
Thanks, guys. Good night.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night, Lady Angel.